Hans, Cedric ran his finger easily over the blunted edge. It was worthless. Cedric's grip on the non-sword loosened, and it fell to the ground. Again, he wondered what kind of world this was, where everything seemed false and unreal. The beast, with red and blue lights, moved toward them, and now Cedric could see actual letters along its hide. L-O-S-A-N-G-E-L-E-S, and smaller writing underneath. He looked at his hands, which were empty, open, exposed. His sword was gone. His last link to Calum was gone. A fear stronger than any he had ever known gripped Cedric, and he couldn't move. He stood between Merrick and Cat, frozen, watching as the beast grew closer, knowing they had no way to fight it off. They had no backup, no weapons, no knowledge of anything around them. They were entirely alone.
The Artifact. 2 months later. Liv pulled the curtains wide to let in the harsh morning light. As she crossed her small bedroom, she avoided looking into the cracked mirror above her cheap flea market bureau. She didn't need confirmation of the dark circles under her eyes or the knots in her hair. She knew from experience that looking into a mirror in direct California sunlight after getting only 3 hours of sleep could not end well for anyone. Stretched across Liv's tiny twin bed, Shannon slept on, face smushed against the pillow, last night's clothes twisted around her body. Liv smiled, grabbed her phone from her nightstand, and clicked open the camera app. She turned on the flash, inched closer to the bed, and lowered the phone until Shannon's half-open mouth was centered in the screen. Shannon groaned as the bright light flashed across her face.
"What are you doing?" Shannon mumbled, half turning over and crossing her arms over her face.
"Too early."
"Actually, we're late." Liv smiled and snapped another picture. "Gotta get up."
"Oh, no."
"Come on," Liv said in a sing-song voice. Then, less quietly, "You promised, remember? You said that if I went out with you last night, you'd drive me to my appointment in the morning." Liv pulled the comforter off of her best friend, causing her to curl up like a worm exposed to sunlight. "And it is now officially morning." Shannon groaned, her eyes still closed.
"You're so not my favorite person right now."
"What if I buy you a coffee?"
"From Coffee Bean?"
Shannon exhaled, then opened her eyes.
"Fine."
Liv laughed as Shannon finally sat up and ran her hand tentatively through her newly shortened hair. It was matted to her head, and its tips, which had also recently been dyed red, stuck up in funny angles around her ears. Her mascara ran from the corner of her eye down to her ear on one side, and her long, dangling earring had left an imprint in her cheek from when she'd slept on it in the night. Shannon looked in the cracked mirror and shook her head.
"Ugh, this is gonna take some time."
"We don't have time. I'm supposed to meet with the museum acquisitions lady at 10.
10 a.m. during the last week of summer? Just feels so wrong."
Shannon picked up a limp strand of hair and let it fall back against her forehead. Then she pulled out the tube of red lipstick she'd worn the night before and reapplied it to her lips, smacking them together when she was done. While Liv only really dressed up when Shannon dragged her out to all-ages clubs, Shannon treated every single day like it was a Saturday night. Liv slipped a jacket over her shoulders to cover up what Shannon mockingly called the only evidence of her inner wild child, an ill-gotten tattoo that she preferred to ignore. She slipped on a pair of chucks and went systematically through her room, erasing any signs of mess. First, she made up her bed, pulling the sheet into tight hospital corners and arranging the pillows by the headboard. She collected a few stray hair ties from the floor and piled them neatly on her dresser, next to the one decoration in the room that was truly hers. A framed photo of herself and Shannon they'd taken during an excursion to Amoeba Records. Every other decoration in the room had been placed there by her foster mother, Rita. The small guest bedroom still had the mothball-smelling floral bedspread and generic framed pictures of kittens on the walls that were there when Liv had moved in a year before. Most of her important belongings were hidden away in the closet. Her meager camera equipment, sketchbooks, and photographs. One of the first things she had learned as a foster kid was to keep anything she valued hidden away or locked up. It also helped to know that she could always pack up her whole life with 5 minutes' notice. Liv's eyes tracked over the nearly spotless room. The only item truly out of place was the heavy sword, which rested against the wooden bureau. She picked it up for the first time in weeks and was again instantly surprised by its weight. At first glance, the sword could almost pass as fake, the kind of cheap item sold at Comic-Con or a Ren Fair, until she actually felt its heft in her hands. Liv was relieved to finally be getting rid of it. She'd had a hard time shaking that weird night of the film shoot from her mind. Not only had she had to completely change her shooting plans, thanks to Jeremy being too freaked out by the earthquake to return to the river, but now she had this unwanted prop as a reminder of that night. Every time she saw it, she thought of the strangers in nightgowns who'd shown up out of nowhere before disappearing just as quickly. The shaking ground, the lost equipment. Hopefully, once the sword was out of sight, that night and its unanswered questions would be out of her mind as well. Right after bringing the sword home, Liv had immediately called her caseworker, Joe, to tell him about what had happened. She'd first thought to call the police, but then realized that a teenage foster kid in possession of a deadly weapon probably wasn't the most credible witness. So Joe had called for the police for her, and they'd said the sword hadn't been reported as stolen. They'd agreed to keep an eye out for the weird teens or reports of missing weapons, but after 2 months, Joe hadn't heard from them. He was the one who suggested that Liv donate the sword to a museum if she wanted to get rid of it so badly. It looked old enough to probably belong there anyway. "Let's go," Liv said to Shannon as she carefully walked across the room, holding the sword and its crazy sharp edges as far from her skin as possible. She led Shannon through the tiny hallway with its nicotine-stained walls and into the kitchen, where she frowned at the dirty dishes in the sink. As soon as they reached the living room, Liv came to a halt. Rita was passed out cold on the sofa. Just like Shannon, she was still wearing last night's clothes. Her heels and purse rested under the coffee table near 2 empty bottles of wine. "Looks like we weren't the only ones out late celebrating the end time," Shannon said. Liv pulled Shannon slightly away from the doorway and lowered her voice to a whisper. "Shh, don't wake her. And enough with the dramatic apocalypse stuff. Well, what would you call 4 earthquakes in 3 months?" Shannon asked, her voice as close to a whisper as it could get, which was not very. "I call it summer in L.A. Now come on." Liv set the sword carefully against the wall and walked slowly toward Rita, navigating around some tubes of lipstick that had somehow found their way out of Rita's purse and onto the floor. Up close, Rita looked peaceful. Her usually teased and sprayed hair was flattened into submission against a couch pillow, and her eyes fluttered as if she was dreaming. The heavy curtains in the living room were slightly parted, letting in a crack of daylight to fall across Rita's face. Through them, Liv could see Rita's useless, broken-down car sitting in the driveway. Next to it was Liv's still crappy but at least functioning Toyota. It wasn't pretty, but it had taken Liv 2 after-school jobs to save up for the down payment, and she was proud of it. Ordinarily, she'd be driving her own car to the museum. But this week, she'd lent it to Rita, until Rita made enough tip money to get her own car fixed. Liv figured it was the least she could do. Rita wasn't the best foster parent Liv had ever had. That honor went to Chuck and Marty, the elderly couple who'd taken her in when she was 8. They were the ones who'd bought her first camera, who'd shown her E.T. for the first time. They had encouraged her obsession with movies, even letting her stay up late to watch old classics like The Godfather and Casablanca with them on their 16-inch TV. Liv could have stayed with them forever. But unfortunately, Marty had to move back to Australia to take care of his sick mom, and Chuck had gone with him. They left Liv behind. Since then, though, the foster family situation had seriously declined. Liv had moved from house to house, getting bounced out of some, running away from others. Rita wasn't perfect, but she treated Liv with respect and left her alone most of the time. They got along. Liv drew an old afghan down from the back of the couch and spread it across Rita. She picked up the empty wine bottles and carried them into the kitchen, careful not to clank them against each other as she lined them up neatly on the countertop. Now that her summer program was over, she'd have some time to spend cleaning up the house before school started up. Sparing one last glance at her foster mom, Liv once again picked up the sword and motioned to Shannon. Together they slipped out through the screen door and into the hot late August morning. Shannon pulled her mom's minivan over to the side of the road, right across the street from the Natural History Museum. She yawned, then reached out to take a gulp from the iced coffee that sat in her cup holder.
"How long will this take, you think?"
Liv shrugged. "Maybe like an hour or so. I haven't exactly done this before." "Sure you don't want to come with?" Liv asked.
"Tempting, but since I already have this baby out of the house," Shannon said, patting the minivan's steering wheel, "might as well take advantage. Think I'm going to swing down through the fashion district, see if there's any sales."
"Your mom's gonna kill you." Shannon shrugged. Her parents had grounded her when they discovered Shannon had spent her summer not volunteering at the library like she'd claimed, but acting in Liv's movie. Both conservative Minnesota transplants, Shannon's parents weren't too pleased about their daughter's obsession with becoming the next Jennifer Lawrence. Not that their disapproval stopped Shannon. Nothing ever stopped Shannon.
"What are they going to do? Lock me in my room? There's, like, laws against that," Shannon said with a grin. "Text me when you need me to pick you up."
"Sounds good." Liv opened the door handle, maintaining a careful grip on the sword. Before she got out, Shannon reached over and grabbed at her sleeve.
"Are you sure you just want to give that thing up? I mean, it could be worth something."
Liv lifted an eyebrow.
"Yeah, and getting mixed up in the arms market is exactly what I need on my college resume. For all you know, that thing could pay for college. Or your next movie."
This gave Liv pause for just a moment, but then shook her head. "Not worth the trouble."
"Please, you love trouble."
I think you're confusing me with you," Liv said as she hopped out of the van.
"If you say so. See you in a bit."
As Shannon pulled away from the curb, Liv turned to face the museum. Though she'd lived in Los Angeles her whole life, she'd never actually been here before. She walked up the path toward the front door, passing vendors selling fruits and bags of chips. She was quickly surrounded by families and groups of kids trailing stressed-looking nannies. Liv's eyes flicked over the crowd. Her mind went through its regular mental checks, running through the same questions it did whenever she saw the unfamiliar faces of kids around her age. How many of them were fair-haired, bespectacled boys a couple of years older than her? And how many were freckled young girls who tripped over their own 2 feet when they walked? It had been nearly 10 years since Liv had seen her biological brother and sister, and it was unlikely she'd run into them by chance, and unlikelier still that she'd recognize them when she did. But she couldn't help checking every time. No boys or girls she saw matched the outdated images of Peter and Maisie that she clung to in her mind, and Liv breathed a sigh of both disappointment and relief. Once the flickering hope had passed, it was easier to get on with her day. She gripped the sword closer and made her way quickly inside. The first thing Liv noticed was a giant skeleton of a T-Rex, one she recognized from dozens of television shows and movies that had been shot at the museum. As she walked around it, Liv got that strange feeling she always got when she encountered something in person in L.A. that she had first seen on a television screen. A sense of inclusion, like she was being let in on a secret that no one else knew. Like she was seeing behind the scenes of something amazing. Liv pulled out her phone and rechecked the email she'd been sent by the assistant to the museum's acquisitions director. She was supposed to meet with the director, who would appraise the sword and hopefully take it off her hands as a donation made to the museum in her name. The hilt of the sword felt hot in Liv's hands as she made her way up to the museum's member desk. An older woman with glasses looked Liv up and down, raising one eyebrow when she saw the sword point dangling down by Liv's knee. Liv cleared her throat and explained she had an appointment. The woman said nothing but turned to a monitor on the desk. She typed into it for a few minutes, then gestured for Liv to follow her. The desk woman led Liv through a series of hallways and deposited her on a wooden chair outside of a door labeled Acquisitions. "Should I just wait?" Liv asked. "Dr. Clark knows you're here," the woman said, before turning around and leaving Liv alone in the hall. She didn't see another person for 45 minutes. Though the entrance to the museum had been bustling, this back hallway was nothing but stillness and silence. Liv's ears perked up whenever she heard the sound of footsteps in the distance, but they always trailed off before coming her way. The acquisitions door remained firmly shut. She played with her phone until finally the door creaked open and a mousy-looking man peered out into the hall. "Olivia Phillips?" "That's me," Liv said, standing. The man motioned for her to sit back down. "I'm so sorry, but Dr. Clark is running behind this morning. We just got a big shipment from Egypt." "Oh," Liv said. "Do you know what time?" "Hard to say," the man interrupted. "Maybe you could visit the exhibits and I'll call you when Dr. Clark is ready," he suggested. A phone rang in the background and the man's eyes twitched in the direction of the sound. "Sure," Liv said. She held up the sword. "But what should I do with this?" The man paused for a moment, thinking. The phone kept ringing, and he held out his hand. "We'll keep it here. Don't worry. Dr. Clark is eager to meet with you. She's having an extremely busy morning." Liv put the sword hilt in the man's outstretched fist. "Sure, I understand. My number is..." "I have it," the man said, then shut the door again in Liv's face. "Okay," she said to the closed door. Liv found her way back to the visitors' portion of the museum and texted Shannon with an update. She ate at the museum grill before passing through several rooms, gazing over shiny rocks in the gems and minerals room, and passing a 100-year-old trolley in the Los Angeles exhibit. She checked her phone every 2 minutes as the day slid by. At 4:47, Liv officially passed from irritated into fully pissed off. She had been hoping to spend the afternoon storyboarding ideas for her next short film project, but now those hours were lost. Liv pushed against the flow of exiting museum traffic, trying to make her way back to the acquisitions department one last time. She was going to tell that mousy man that Dr. Clark could just keep the freaking sword and leave her out of it. Liv turned in the general direction she thought would lead her back to the office. Every hallway she stepped into was less crowded than the one she'd just left. The voices of the crowd behind her began to filter out and then fade altogether. After 20 minutes, Liv looked up to discover she was completely alone, in front of a doorway with a banner strung up over it. The banner featured an odd symbol, a small dark circle with two lines drawing down from it like daggers. Liv stared at the mark for a moment, unable to look away. It seemed so familiar, and yet she couldn't place where she'd seen it before. The words below the mark read, "Lost Languages Exhibit, July through October." Liv pushed the door open and stepped inside. The room was empty. Lost Languages not having quite the same draw as Velociraptor Bones. Lining the walls of the room were long glass cases filled with yellowing books and pieces of parchment. The door at the far end of the room was propped open slightly by a small rock. Gold letters stretched across its metal surface, reading, "Museum Archives Room. Permission required." Liv checked her watch. Past 5:30 now, and cursed under her breath. Just as she turned to go, Liv saw a flash of blue from beyond the nearby closed door at the end of the room. She walked toward it, and through the crack between the door and the wall, she saw a dimly lit corridor. Walking quickly in the opposite direction down the hall was a tallish boy wearing a blue shirt, the uniform of the museum's security guards. Liv briefly thought to call out and ask for directions to the acquisitions department, but then the security guard turned to a door on his left, and Liv's mouth dropped open. She knew that profile. It wasn't just familiar. It screamed out from her memory. Dark hair, square jaw, and blue, blue eyes? It was him. The boy from under the bridge. The sword boy himself, here in the flesh. Momentarily stunned, Liv could do nothing but stare as the boy quickly slipped into a side door from the hallway. She hadn't expected to ever see him again, let alone here in the back hallway of a public museum, dressed as a security guard. It was surreal enough to stop her in her tracks, but there was no mistake. It was the same boy. "Wait!" Liv called out, finally finding her voice. But she was a moment too late, and the door slammed behind him. Her mind raced. What was Sword Boy doing here? Had he been following her? Maybe to get the sword back. But if so, why had he waited 2 months? And what was with the uniform? Nothing made sense. Without even thinking, Liv stepped into the hallway. She let go of the metal door, and it fell backward. It knocked aside the rock that had been propping it open and hit against the door jamb with a small click. Liv reached out to try the handle, but it held firm, locked. "Of course," she whispered. There was nowhere to go except forward down the hallway, in the same direction as the sword boy slash security guard slash walking unsolved mystery person. She had definitely entered an off-limits area, one that wasn't meant to be seen by paying guests. Unlike the cool marble corridors of the museum proper, this hallway was covered with old, scuffed linoleum. Fluorescent lights hung from metal cages in the ceiling. Instead of glass cases or displays, the walls of the hallway were lined with closed doors. Liv reached the area of the hallway where the boy had turned. On her left-hand side was a scuffed-up wooden door with a glass pane located at eye level. At first, all Liv could see through the grimy glass pane were books. Rows and rows of books, arranged on overcrowded metal bookshelves that were set up haphazardly around the room. Some of the books looked old, with cracked leather bindings and yellowed covers. Others seemed to be held together just by rubber bands. Liv couldn't see the boy, but in the far corner of the room, something was moving. A tall metal bookshelf seemed to be gliding across the room. Liv leaned closer to the window pane to get a better look, almost smacking her forehead on the glass. At the bottom of the metal unit, she could see a hand pulling the bookshelf. The hand was attached to an arm, which disappeared into a hole in the wall. No, not a hole, Liv realized. A tunnel. The mouth of the tunnel was rough and jagged, and only about 3 feet high. It obviously wasn't an official passageway. It didn't look like it belonged in the museum at all. The boy had crawled inside it and was now dragging a bookshelf back to cover the hole. One book fell from the shelf and landed on the ground with a smacking noise, which made Liv jump. The bookshelf was once again resting immobile against the wall and covering the tunnel as Liv pushed her way into the room and over to it. For a moment, she looked at the bookshelf as if willing herself to see beyond it. She was debating whether or not to call out again when she heard the muted sounds of voices coming from behind the bookshelf. Liv strained to listen, but couldn't make out what the voices were saying. She gripped the edges of the metal bookshelf and pulled with all her might. After finally budging it a few inches away from the wall, she stopped to listen again. "Hear that?" The voice sounded young, like a teenage girl. Someone responded in a gruff voice that Liv couldn't make out. The girl's voice continued, "Cannot keep going on like this." Liv leaned closer, but the voices were moving in the opposite direction, getting harder to hear. She could turn around right now, somehow find a way around the locked door and back to the main part of the museum and then home, leaving the sword and this whole incident behind her forever. But seeing the boy again felt like too big, too strange a coincidence to ignore. What if she left now and spent the rest of her life with unanswered questions about that night under the bridge? And the white-clad sword switcher who'd somehow morphed into a museum security guard. "Oh, hell," she said under her breath as she peered into the wall tunnel. "If Indiana Jones can do it." Positioning herself to the side of the bookshelf, Liv put her shoulder against it and pushed with all of her might. The shelf inched backward from the wall with a screeching groan. Liv stopped when there was just enough space between the bookshelf and the wall for her to slip through. She took a deep breath, crouched down, and stepped into the dark tunnel. The Labyrinth. At first, Liv saw only blackness and shadows, but as she inched farther into the tunnel, her eyes began to adjust to the darkness. The walls around her were rough, and sharp edges of brick, cement, and metal pressed out on either side. Liv took out her phone and pressed the 9 and 1 buttons, then left her thumb hovering over the glowing numbers. If following a potentially unbalanced, if admittedly hot, stranger boy down into the unlit bowels of a quiet museum turned out to be a huge mistake, she at least wanted to be prepared. Liv slowly moved forward, almost convincing herself she was fully in control of the situation. After a few more steps, the tunnel opened up into what appeared to be an old hallway, one with smooth cement floors and actual constructed walls, albeit ones that looked like they might crumble apart at any second. The hallway didn't seem to have working lights or doors. It stretched on into the darkness as far as Liv could see, and she took one turn after the next, following the distant sound of voices as they moved away. After a few minutes, they became clear again. "No, I heard something. Please, just trust me. Too dangerous. Someone could get killed." Liv stopped in her tracks. Although she couldn't see them, she could feel the hairs rising on her arms. Killed? It hit her all at once, how dumb it was for her to come down here. Though she was in the exact same position she had been in moments earlier, everything suddenly looked different. Her flimsy sense of control slipped away completely like the unreliable companion it was, leaving her alone in an underground tunnel with a smartphone for a weapon. What had she been thinking, pretending to be all Indiana Jones confident, when this could just as easily be a Silence of the Lambs situation? Liv raised her phone screen to shed light on the darkness in front of her and took a step backward. Her foot landed on something hard and pointy, and she winced when it cut through the bottom of one of her chucks. A rock. The sound of the rock scraping against the cement floor issued a faint echo through the tunnel. "There! I know I heard something that time, the girl's voice said in a harsh whisper. The male voice replied, but Liv couldn't make it out. She stopped in her tracks, straining to hear. At first, there was nothing, just the sound of her own breathing. But then, heavy footsteps echoed out in the hallway. They were heading in her direction, and they were running. Liv started moving backward quickly, away from the rapidly approaching footsteps. She brought her thumb down on the one on her phone, pressed send, and waited for the emergency call to go through. The call didn't connect. She had zero bars. Obviously. Liv sucked in her breath and picked up her pace. She kept her eyes on the darkness in front of her as the running footsteps got louder and louder. The light from her phone bounced wildly along the tunnel walls, and Liv couldn't make out where she was going. Her foot hit a bump in the floor, and she pitched forward. A hand reached out and grabbed Liv's arm from behind, jerking her backward. Just as she started to scream, another hand clapped against her mouth, trapping her cry against her throat, unheard. Liv tried not to panic. That was one of the first things she'd picked up in her self-defense class, which she'd taken at a community center when she was 14, and had been placed in a particularly unsatisfactory home along with two handsy 16-year-old boys. To panic is to waste valuable time. It's far better to stop, wait to catch your breath, and then strike your assailant in the place they're most vulnerable. Liv counted to three, then bit down hard on the fingers that were clamped over her mouth. Ow! You bit me! Liv whirled around, arms up in defense mode, and found herself facing a tallish figure. She swung her phone's screen around to light him up, and saw it was him, of course. The boy from under the bridge. He winced in the bluish light, and put his finger up to his mouth, sucking on the space where Liv had bitten to his skin. You grabbed me, only to stop you from screaming, he said in his strange, unplaceable accent. Who are you? What are you doing down here? Liv's hand shook as she tried to think of a single good answer, and the light from her phone bounced around the walls of the tunnel. The boy tracked the light to her face, and his eyes widened in surprise. You, he said. You were the girl from the night we... But how did you come to be here? Did you follow me? No. I mean, technically yes, Liv replied, feeling flustered. But I only followed you to see why you were following me. The boy blinked. What? Liv shook her head. What are you doing here? I believe I asked you first. What are you, 12? Liv took a deep breath. Let's start over. A couple months ago, I was shooting my movie when I saw you and some other kids in pajamas down by the river. You acted sketch as hell, somehow switched swords with me, and ran away. So again, I ask, what are you doing here? The boy's eyes widened. They looked almost black in the tunnel and remained fixed and intensely focused on her. He grabbed Liv's arm. You have my sword? Are you sure it's yours? You didn't steal it from anywhere? She looked around the tunnel, wondering what other rooms in the museum it might connect to. Like, say, from a museum? Are you some kind of security guard grifter who peddles stolen swords on the side? What? Liv grimaced. I don't think I could say it again. The boy shook his head as if trying to clear it. I did not steal the sword. You did. Liv pulled her arm free. I didn't steal it. You left it behind. And I was just delivering it to the museum where it probably belongs. Is it here? The boy asked, his eyes lighting up in the darkness. Where? Liv realized she wasn't likely to get any satisfactory answers out of this strange boy. Talking to him was like trying to have a conversation with the staticky disembodied voice that took orders at the Fatburger drive-thru. Frustrating and near impossible. Now what she wanted most was to get out of this cold, dirty tunnel that she regretted walking into in the first place. and she certainly no longer cared what became of that stupid sword. It was officially time to bail.
"Tell you what," Liv said, summoning courage. "I'll tell you where the sword is if you tell me the fastest way out of here."
The boy seemed to consider her for a moment, then nodded. He looked behind him once, into the blackness of the tunnel, and Liv wondered if the girl he had been talking to was still back there, listening. Was it the same girl from under the bridge? Then the boy turned again toward Liv. "We have a deal." And then he bowed. Actually, truly bent at the waist and bowed.
The boy didn't wait for a better response.
He started off in the direction Liv had come from, without turning around to see if she was following him. They walked in silence for a few moments, Liv following the careful bobbing of his dark head as it ducked beneath the low-hanging sections of the ceiling. The boy came to an abrupt stop, turned right, and put his hands up against the wall. Through the dimness, Liv could just make out the outlines of a wooden panel, one she hadn't seen on the way in. The boy grabbed the edges of the panel with both hands and pulled, yanking it free. Behind the panel, there was another hallway, also dark and abandoned. He stepped through the opening and then put his hand back for Liv.
"This isn't the way we came in," Liv said.
"It is the fastest way out." Liv hesitated a moment, then reached out for the boy's hand and clasped it. His palm was warm, and she felt strength in his rough, calloused fingers. Liv looked up from his hand and saw that he was watching her, his eyes slightly narrowed. He gave a light shake of his head, like he was trying to clear it of something, and pulled her into the second tunnel after him. When she was through, the boy let go of her hand, and Liv let it fall back to her side. She felt strangely conscious of it then, of its weight and feel, of the sweatiness of her palm. She balled it into a fist and continued walking. After a few minutes, Liv saw an opening far up ahead and what looked like the late afternoon light filtering in. Finally, they reached a grate in the worn concrete wall, about 2 feet high and 2 feet wide, and located just a few inches off the ground. The boy reached down to loosen the edges of the grate and ply it away from the wall.
"Out you go," he said.
"Wait," Liv protested. "Are you serious? Where does this even lead?"
"To a side alley east of the museum. Turn left and walk true, and you will eventually find the main thoroughfare. It is the fastest way out."
Liv was about to duck to go through the grate when the boy reached out and touched her lightly on the shoulder.
"The sword.
Last I saw it, it was in the acquisitions department. It's probably still there." Relief washed over his face.
"Thank you," he said.
"Sure, any time," Liv responded. "You're kind of a weirdo and possibly a criminal, but I guess I'm sorry I bit you." For the first time, Liv saw the boy smile. It was a nice smile, a slightly uneven one that turned up on the right side of his face more than the left. It made him look younger.
"I will heal."
Liv dropped down lower to the ground, but turned back toward the boy once more. "I'm Liv, by the way." The boy paused before responding.
"Cedric."
"Well, bye, Cedric. Enjoy your sword."
"Goodbye, Liv."
With that, he turned and started walking back through the tunnel. Liv hesitated, stopped by the strange urge to call something out after him that would make him turn around. Instead, she watched Cedric disappear around a slight curve in the tunnel before ducking her head through the grate and crawling into the alley beyond. It was still light out, but the sun had fallen behind the museum wall, casting shadows over the narrow space. On the opposite side of the alley was a brick wall separating Liv from a small park. Down at the far end to her left, she could just barely make out a few cars driving by on Exposition Boulevard. Liv started walking, After a few moments, she thought she heard footsteps treading behind her. She turned around, expecting to see Cedric, but saw only the brick walls of the alley and an overturned recycling bin. She turned back and hastened her steps. There it was again. Definite footsteps. "Cedric?" Liv called out. No response. It sounded as though the footsteps were getting closer. Liv whipped her head around, trying to see who was following her, and ran smack into something solid and large. She bounced back and nearly fell to the ground. The solid figure, a man, reached an arm out and steadied her. "Sorry," Liv gasped. "I thought there was something." The man stared at Liv. He was more than 6 feet tall, dressed in simple jeans and a t-shirt. Dark, thinning hair curled around his ears and dropped to the edges of his shoulders. For a moment, his face betrayed no expression. Then he smiled. Or no, smiled wasn't exactly the word for it. His lips curled up, exposing his teeth, and the skin crinkled around his eyes. But there was no warmth there. It was the approximation of a smile, like something you'd see on a Halloween mask. The man was still holding on to Liv's arm. I think I should go. Liv tried to wriggle her arm free, but the man just gripped tighter. "Where you headed, little girl?" he asked. Liv shivered at the hollowness in his voice. A familiar warning sign went off in the back of her head. Danger. Many people felt it at some time or another, when they passed homeless men muttering to themselves on the street, or a group of teenage boys walking by with their pants hanging low. But Liv knew the most dangerous people were often the ones you didn't expect. Signs of hunger, mental instability, or bad fashion choices weren't the things to watch out for. It was a certain tone of voice, a calculated attempt at humanity, an emptiness. Liv twisted her arm free with a violent yank, sprinted around the man, and took off running down the alley toward the main street. Her heart burned against her chest. The man was close behind her. She could feel it. She could hear him gaining on her. And then, without warning, something landed squarely against Liv's back, knocking her to the ground. Liv struggled to breathe, but she couldn't find air. She squirmed and rolled around until she was facing up and saw the face of the man leering down at her. He had her pinned to the ground by the arms and was smiling that awful smile. She knew how to get through this. She just had to find the most vulnerable point and strike it. The man's throat was defenseless, and the hand pinning her left arm to the ground was loosening. If she could just free her hand, she could jam her fingers into the skin there. Liv prepared to swing up her left arm, but then froze when she saw the man's face. His smile stretched wider, and his eyes changed colors, turning from dark brown to black. It was as if the pupils completely dilated and spread, overtaking first the irises and then the whites of his eyes, pooling slowly outward like ink spilled in a glass of milk. After a moment, the man's eyes were completely black, his smile stretched, opening wider than any mouth should. And his teeth? There was something wrong with his teeth. There were more of them than there should be. Liv blinked rapidly, trying to clear up this image that was so obviously wrong. It didn't work. She wondered if she had a concussion. The man leaned in, his teeth getting closer and closer to her face. "I've been waiting for you all day," he said. "So tell me quick, girl, where are the rest of your little friends?" Liv tried to control her ragged breathing, tried to curb the panic running through her limbs. "I don't know what you're talking about," she choked out. "Please." "No need to beg," the man continued. "Answer my questions and I will let you go. Fight me and I will leave your mangled body behind as a warning for the others." Liv struggled to suck in air as the man leaned down even closer and whispered into her ear,
Personally, I hope you choose to fight.
He gripped her jaw with his hand, and Liv screamed. The monster. Teeth. Hot breath. And so many teeth. Liv was still screaming, but she doubted anyone would come running. The opening to the alley was too far away. The man's lips curled back. He put his mouth against her cheek, and she felt those teeth touch her skin. Liv braced herself for the pain, but it didn't come. Instead, the man jerked backward. He flew through the air and landed on the ground a few feet from Liv. Standing behind him, brandishing a shining knife the size of a forearm, was Cedric. Cedric's eyes blazed, and he spared just one glance to Liv before advancing on the man. Liv scrambled to her feet at the same time her attacker did. A voice in the back of her brain screamed at her to run, run, but she couldn't move. She was frozen solid, a statue in jeans and chucks. And even if she could run, she didn't know which direction to go. The hulking man blocked her exit to the road. Liv couldn't look away from the man's face. His eyes were still entirely black, reflecting zero light. He hissed at Cedric, a completely inhuman sound. Cedric lunged at him, and for a moment, he seemed inhuman too. His movements were so fast, so sure. His face was entirely altered from the one she'd seen in the museum tunnel. He wore the rigid expression of a seasoned boxer, calculating his opponent's next move. One second he was standing flat on the pavement, knife in hand, and the next he was at the man's throat. The man tried to dodge Cedric. He, too, was moving fast. Much too fast. But he wasn't as fast as Cedric. Liv tried to keep up with the tangle of limbs, heads, and legs, but she had a hard time telling Cedric apart from her attacker in the fading light. Every few moments she saw the gleaming blade whip through the air before plunging down again. She couldn't tell if it was connecting with anything. Then she saw an arm in blue sleeves, Cedric's, reach out in a slicing motion. She heard more hissing from the black-eyed man as he leaped away. He was holding his neck, and blood was trickling through his fingers. He was no longer smiling. "You cannot defeat me with that toy," he growled. Cedric actually smiled in response, the right side of his lips pulling upward. "No, but I can have a great deal of fun trying." The man lunged for Cedric again, but at the last second he altered his attack, sliding toward the ground and kicking out straight to knock Cedric off his feet. Cedric hit the pavement with a hollow thud, and his smile fell from his face. The man got up and crouched over Cedric's back, pinning his neck to the ground with one hand. "Help!" Liv screamed. She turned toward the museum, but saw no doors or windows nearby. "Please help us!" But even as she screamed her voice raw, she knew there was no time. The black-eyed man was reaching for Cedric's right hand, the one with the blade. He pinched Cedric's wrist hard and weakened his grasp. Liv could see that it would only be a matter of seconds before the knife was ripped free. "Cedric!" she yelled, but this time she moved as well. "Concentrate on the weak points. The weak points. The weak points." The black-eyed man was focused on Cedric. He didn't see Liv approach, didn't see her kick out with all her might toward the side of his knee. Liv's right foot connected hard, sending vibrations up her leg. The black-eyed man's leg bent inward. He let out a long, horrid cry and clutched at his knee. Liv reached into her pocket and closed her fist around her keys. She fumbled a bit with the biggest key, the one that unlocked Rita's front door, and situated it between her ring and middle fingers, pointing outward. Before the black-eyed man could get to his feet, Liv punched out with her fist, key first, toward his left eye. He pulled away just in time, jerking backward so that the tip of the key caught the skin under his eye instead of its intended target. His lips curled, and he made a noise that sounded like a cat growling, and not a small cat either. Liv's mind raced to think of her next move. The man swung out with alarming speed and grabbed for Liv's arm, getting a grip on her jacket sleeve. She pulled backward, maneuvering herself out of her jacket and pulling her arm free. The momentum sent her spinning, and she crashed to the ground, landing hard on her forearms. The chilly night air blew across her neck and back, exposed in just a tank top. Liv twisted her head around to face the black-eyed man, but he stood still, his mouth hanging partially open. He was staring at Liv with wide, rounded eyes that now seemed more human than feral. He almost looked surprised. Liv's torn jacket dangled limply in his hands before falling to the ground. Before either the black-eyed man or Liv could make another move, Cedric leaped out of the darkness. He brought his blade down hard into the man's back and pulled it out again. The man let out a ferocious scream that bounced off the walls of the alley. He cast one last glance to Liv before turning on his heels and sprinting away.
"How do you like that for toy?"
Cedric yelled to the man's retreating form. He turned to Liv as she slowly stood up. Her eyes were fixed on his bloody blade, which he quickly slipped into his pocket.
"It is gone now,"
Cedric said. It took a moment for his words to register. "It?" Liv realized she was struggling to breathe and saw dots begin to circle in front of her eyes. The shapes in front of her, the building, the recycling bin, Cedric, all started to get a little hazy around the edges. Cedric stopped a few feet away from Liv.
"Sorry, I misspoke. I meant he. He was trying to hurt you and..."
"No," Liv said, her voice coming out firmer than expected. "There was something really wrong with him."
"His mouth? His eyes?"
Cedric's eyes widened.
"You could see that. You saw his true face."
"Of course I saw his face. It was totally jacked, like he was on some crazy kind of drugs or something. But why did he attack me? And how did you get to me so fast? And that knife, you moved so quick."
Cedric reached a tentative hand out to Liv.
"You are injured."
"I just hit my head, I think."
Cedric shook his own head a little and gently lifted up her hand. Liv looked down, and at first all she noticed was a patch of red. The skin of her left hand, reaching from the fleshy area beneath her thumb down to her wrist, had been partially peeled away. She hadn't even felt it until just now.
"Whoa," she whispered.
"And yes, your head," Cedric added. He reached up and moved a lock of her hair to get a better view of the side of her face. He moved slowly, gently, brushing Liv's temple with his thumb. When she lifted her hand to her head a moment later, to the place where his fingers had just been, she felt something warm and sticky. Blood.
"Oh,"
she said, and her voice sounded shaky to her own ears.
"I don't do so well with..."
Liv pitched forward a little, and Cedric caught her, one hand on her arm and another circling around her back. He held her steady and slightly away from his body, but Liv was still close enough to feel the heat coming off him, his breath as it ruffled her hair. She righted herself quickly.
"It's okay, I'm okay. It's only my own blood that brings on the embarrassing dizziness."
"There is not too much of it," Cedric said. "I can retrieve some clean cloths and bandages. If you wait here, I'll be right back."
"Are you kidding? There's no way I'm staying alone in this alley."
Cedric considered this, then nodded.
"All right, come with me, but stay quiet. It would be best if the others did not see you."
"The others? That's what the man that... whoever, that's what he said. That he was going to leave me for the others to find." A look of concern passed over Cedric's face, but he said nothing. He picked up her discarded jacket and handed it to Liv. She threw it over her shoulders and followed him back down the alley. You don't seem really surprised by that, Liv said. Do you know who he was? Why he... what he wanted? Cedric hesitated before answering. Not exactly. Not exactly? Liv fought to keep her voice calm, but could hear hysteria edging in. She breathed in deep. What exactly is it? Drugs? Gang stuff? It is difficult to explain, and trust me, you really do not want me to. Trust you? You want me to trust you? You know how crazy that sounds? We were just attacked. We have to report it. Report it to whom? Cedric said, looking genuinely confused. The police? They'd reached the grate in the wall of the museum. Cedric turned to face her, and his expression was difficult to read in the darkness. You mean the men in blue, with the lights that flash? He made a circular motion in the air with his hand, as if he was trying to demonstrate police lights. Liv's eyebrows shot up, sending a spark of pain across her hairline. She winced. Yes, here in... well, pretty much all English-speaking countries, we call those men the police. Liv put a finger to her temple and rubbed, trying to ease the pain there. At this point, she wasn't sure how much of it was caused by her head cracking against the concrete, and how much was caused by trying to carry on a conversation with Cedric. You may call the men in blue if you wish, but if you do, we will be long gone before they arrive, Cedric said. We've already had interactions with those men, the police, and they only tried to separate us. They threatened to send us away, though to where, I know not. Liv flinched reflexively. They only tried to separate us. She thought of Peter and Maisie, then pushed them quickly again from her mind. They cannot help us, Cedric continued. We are alone. Cedric's voice wavered when he said this, and Liv felt her frustration ebb a bit. She knew what it was like to feel that there was no one who could help. She also knew exactly how the LAPD could be when dealing with street kids. Still, she couldn't shake the physical memory of how the black-eyed man had pinned her to the ground, how he'd fought. Something was wrong with him. Really wrong. Okay, I won't call the police, but only if you explain what the hell just happened. That's all I ask. Give me one straight answer. Cedric breathed out. Okay, I will try, he finally said with a short sigh. But not out here. Let us go inside. We will clean your injuries, and I will tell you what you want to know. Though I promise you will not believe me. Don't be so sure, Liv said. I mean, maybe it's the gaping head wound, but I'm feeling pretty open-minded. She smiled at Cedric, but he shook his head, confused. Liv dropped down to the grate. No one ever gets my puns. Careful not to touch her injured hand against the concrete, Liv crawled through the grate hole and out the other side. After a moment, Cedric came through behind her. What is this place, anyway? Liv asked. Cedric's voice was hushed when he answered. It is an old part of the museum, I believe, that has been closed off. I found the opening in the alley wall, and it led to this. He gestured to the tunnels. And the other opening, to that room with the books? Did you just find that, too? That was originally a small hole in the wall that I... helped along. I needed access to... He cut himself off. To what? Shh. We are getting closer. They walked back through the wooden panel that led to the main blocked-off hallway. Wordlessly, Liv followed Cedric through the tunnel entrance, past the bookshelf, through the small room, and into the hallway beyond. The door to the archives room was still locked, So Cedric took Liv through another series of halls before leading her to the public portion of the museum. Once there, he quickened his steps and craned his head to look around every few seconds. He only slowed down when they got to a large black door, labeled with an M. He pushed the door open and made to go inside.